And good morning again to our online participants. I'm Rodney Peterson with EDUCAUSE, and I'm joined by Karen Evans, our keynote speaker, who hopefully many of you had the opportunity to listen to a few minutes ago. We're also joined by Randy Marchini, who's the Chief Information Security Officer from Virginia Tech. Karen alluded to Randy during her comments, and Randy will be joining me in some of the question and answer this morning. Karen, again, thank you for visiting with us at this conference and being part of this event. And I could just ask you maybe quickly, I know there was a lot of energy and excitement and people coming up afterwards asking you questions. Can you just maybe tell us a little bit about the kind of dialogue and the comments that were coming to you after your keynote?
So there was a mixture of comments dealing with how can they be involved, how they want to do other things, how they can get involved in the effort. And then the other comments were the one that I made about maybe it's too late when they get to the university mm-hmm. level. So that kind of sparked a lot of conversation about okay. how to get people involved. And what we probably want to do is work at the junior high school, middle school level and have a certain foundation in place so that colleges don't have to restart the curriculum again, which I thought, yeah, when we get there, that would be really exciting. So there was a lot of discussion around that as well and how can we do that, and then the schools know that they can start at a certain place and the universities expand out the curriculum that they're offering students.
Yeah, and it was really exciting to see, you know, probably 15, 20 people approach you afterwards, which is not unusual, but I think it shows some of the interest in this topic. And Randy, I know you've talked about the U.S. Cyber Challenge before as well, but, you know, from a Chief Information Security Officer's perspective, you're first and foremost concerned about protecting Virginia Tech and doing the things that are part of the CISO job, and yet we have faculty and academics who are raising the next generation of cyber professionals. And, you know, maybe the two of you can talk a little bit about how can this community of ISOs and security staff and security offices at a college or university really help Karen and what you're trying to accomplish?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. As you said, our primary mission is to protect the network environment and the data at Virginia Tech, but I need people with skills that can do that. And right now, I can hire somebody that may have some introductory skills, but I have to spend a lot of time training them and bring them up to speed and then hope that they stay long enough at the university to take advantage of their skills. And we have a lab in the security office that we use, and we try to get a pipeline of students coming in, but again, we have to teach them pretty much from the scratch. And so having a high school feeder type program coming into the college level would certainly help us.
So, Karen, there's a little irony in what you're trying to do here. You're addressing a workforce need, and yet we're in an economy where unemployment is sky high, both nationally and in various parts of the country. How do you see the U.S. Cyber Challenge both addressing the workforce needs you're talking about and maybe retraining or retooling other people who are otherwise out of work? It seems a little ironic that there's a need for employees at a time when unemployment is so high.
And we get asked that question a lot. And so the idea is that's why I said that you can reach out to multiple demographics here. And what we're going to try to do is test out some of these things more on adults as well this fall and run a camp that's specifically targeted for adults. And so when you start looking at this, there are a lot of different population segments of what works and what doesn't work. So there's a lot of interest, for example, in veterans. When veterans return, about giving them the skills and the things that they need so that they can go directly into the marketplace. And so when we talk about this a lot, especially with a lot of the supporters on the Hill, the idea is, you know, they already come back with the mental kind of capacity that you want, because I kind of view a cybersecurity really good one is paranoid, right? They have to sit there and think about everything that could possibly happen and then how you take certain types of actions. Well, if you're coming back from combat, who's better to train them with the skills that you need, because they're at that heightened sense of awareness. The other thing is that there's a whole host, and that's what we showed in the talk about network administrators, system administrators, that they don't necessarily think of themselves as cybersecurity professionals, but they're really cyber-enhanced workforce, so there's a whole set of skills that are associated with retraining them and bringing them in to the workforce so that they can fill that gap in those areas. That's the fastest growing area right now is network administration, system administration people. And they're out there they are your first line of defense. And if they don't know what they're looking for, then they can't really help you out. And so that's a lot of what this is working for. A lot of times in this profession, people think of the elite group, the forensics guys, the intelligence guys, the law enforcement guys. I would submit they have a lot of people. They have a lot of people in there. There's a lot of shows on TV that help recruiting for them and things like that. It's the general population where I'd say that's the biggest bulk of the need, and that's across the board in critical infrastructure, private sector, and the federal government.
Right. Just a reminder to our online participants, if you have questions, please type them in the chat space, and we'll be sure to include your questions during this brief period. Let me move you to a slightly different topic, which is we initially invited you because of your over 2.5 decades experience in the federal government, and you gave us some insights there. It was a recent development that we had someone from the U.S. Department of Education come and talk about their challenge, and you may or may not have interacted much with that department during your time, but thinking about your experiences over that period of time, what did you see by way of improvement and progress at the federal government in cybersecurity, and what might higher ed learn from what we need to do?
Follow-up interview.
So it's a lot that's in there. The biggest thing I would say is senior leadership's involvement in cybersecurity, that it's kind of like you've been invited to the table, so Thanksgiving, you know, you're now at the adult table. It is an issue that secretaries, deputy secretaries, and at that level that are dealing with it on a daily basis. And I would say that that's probably the biggest change, because a lot of this work is always being done. What it's now doing is giving the ability to leverage that work and then spread it out so that you can then raise the bar in security, because that level in the federal departments are now actively engaged in managing the risk.
Mm-hmm. So, Randy, again, from a CISO's perspective, probably a similar challenge, right, keeping your college president and senior administrators aware of the challenge. Did you or have you observed any potential synergies between what's happening in the federal level and what we can do within higher ed?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been really lucky that our president has really given us a lot of support, and our CIO as well. But sometimes it does take what I call a control burn to get everyone's attention. And focus on what's going on. But using the feds, really the availability of grant money for cybersecurity research is kind of stimulating, you know, faculty involvement and stuff like that, because obviously that's what they need. They need the grants and that opportunity, those type of decisions made at the federal level that say, okay, there's a lot of money. DHS, for instance, with all of their cybersecurity funds that are sitting out there. And so, yeah, it's helped us a lot. But there needs to be more. And what we're not seeing as much is a parallel thing at the state level. Everybody's kind of waiting for the federal government to, you know, see which way they go. And then at the state level, they're sort of lagging behind a little bit. And that can affect state institutions that rely on funding and stuff like that from the individual state governments.
So, Karen, let me ask you to reflect upon the Obama administration. I know you're not a part of that administration currently, but when you do a search on Google or any Internet thing for Karen Evans, you find cyber czar. I mean, in many respects, you were referred to kind of the first federal government CIO before there was such a thing, and now the Obama administration has a CIO, a CTO, obviously a president who's pretty technologically savvy. Can you just give some reflections on what kind of progress the Obama administration from an executive branch perspective is making within its first few years of office?
So you've hit the nail on the head. This is a change in the executive branch because you have a president who's very tech savvy. You know, previously President Bush was the first MBA president, so he was known for the business approach on things. I'm fortunate, I believe, and I think anybody who is in the technology field is fortunate, because it's a bipartisan field, and so everyone sees what the issues are and they want to make a difference in the issue, so it's not really a party issue. So what is nice is that each administration builds off of the previous administration's successes. And so just as we built off the Clinton administration's things that they did in information technology, this administration has gotten to build off of the things that we did. So things like, and I know everybody's really nervous about this, but things like moving to the cloud and then having the complement strategy going forward with FedRAMP that they're putting in place that's going to say what the technical specs are for the risk level of those services in the cloud, that's really very, that's good because that's the next generation of services and they're taking it on now instead of after people have moved into the cloud and say, oh, by the way, now we have to do X, Y, and Z. So, you know, the policy has always said build the tech, you know, the security into the solution as you're going along and planning it through the life cycle. You're seeing it play out on a national scale with the initiatives that the Obama administration has moved out. So it's very exciting.
Yeah. So if I can ask you to speculate a little bit about Congress. So you talked a little bit in your comments about the 111th Congress, 50-plus pieces of legislation introduced, hardly anything passed of significance. And that was with a Democratic Congress. Now you have the House Republican, the Senate Democrat, and quite frankly, very little movement at this stage in the game. Any speculation on what, if anything, this Congress will do to improve and move cybersecurity forward?
So I think all of them recognize that it's an issue. There is a difference, and there's a fundamental difference between how some of this operation should work. And that's where you're seeing, I think you're going to see the debate going forward about who should have what set of responsibilities where. And so you hear this talk out in the national stage between the CyberCom, General Alexander, and what he will be doing for the nation in CyberCom and .mil. You also then see it with Greg Schaefer and Phil Reitinger, who are the leads over at DHS and the types of things that they have to do. But Congress established the Department of Homeland Security with very specific rules, very specific policy, very specific operational capabilities that they want them to do. And I think that's where you're seeing this play come out. Should it be them? And one of the big arguments is they don't have the technical expertise to manage this, right? You hear that all the time.
Right.
Well, so you don't legislate a solution around the solution. You get people in there with the skills that you need in order for them to manage the responsibilities that you want them to do. And I think you're starting to see that now with Greg and Phil and the people that are at DHS and how they're moving forward with that. So I actually think you'll see small increments come out because some things that you can do in the federal space, those would pass. When they have greater implications going out into critical infrastructure and private industry, I think those are where the bigger debates are going to be because what are the liabilities and due diligence? How can you demonstrate that?
Right, great. So there is a question online, actually, too, that I'm
online,
and they're talking about, you know, universities obviously can help with the cyber challenge, but what about K-12? I mean, K-12, how can higher ed work to support K-12? K-12 is challenged financially, funding. A lot of effort to address the lower-level students, not necessarily the talented student. What's your experience in getting K-12 communities engaged on this pipeline issue for cybersecurity workforce?
So we have done some outreach. We ran pilots. We ran a pilot last year in California. What we're doing here because of the resource issue is actually putting out the training material for them to be able to use so that they can use it into the classroom because there's nothing worse than to give a requirement to a teacher and then not give them the tools. So what we're trying to do is really kind of jazz this up, give them the tools, make sure that the teachers have access to the tools that they're comfortable with them, and then they can go back and teach their students with that. It's really an evolving field. A lot of schools don't even have the resources in order to be able to teach computers in the schools. And so what we're seeing and what we're hoping to do as this evolves is like work out in the community because there's a lot of community colleges that have resources that are available that the schools could go in and use and kind of have like clubs and then build it in because to get curriculum change at the high school level takes a long time just like the college level. And so it's going to have to be a modular approach.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the community college is an excellent bridge. And a lot of times you will find high schools will send their kids to specialized classes at a community college level. You have faculty and facilities, and that's really the big key is having a facility where you can do that. There are not many high schools that do have a computer classroom that you can use. And the other part is that you have to find the people at the high school. And a lot of times you may find that the people who teach computer classes are a baseball coach or a chemistry teacher or somebody who has some other duties, you know, and subjects to teach, and then they just pick it up because they like the computer side of the house. In Karen's talk, she talked about the kid who won the first NetWars competition, and he told me, I started taking a C class, and in the middle of the semester, he switched to Java because the instructor didn't know C.
Mm-hmm.
So finding the individuals that can teach it at the
right.
high school level, it's difficult to do because they're already strapped. But finding community college instructors who are willing to work with high school, that might be a way to do it.
Yeah, and I think I heard a participant asking you questions and having a discussion. It's not just preparing the workforce. It's preparing the teachers and the
That's
educators
right.
and the mentors who
That's
can
right.
help develop that workforce. We are almost at the end of our time. Let me just ask you one last question on reflection. I know you've been here with us just a short time, had some dinner with some of the community last night, had some interaction today. You know, any impressions about what faces higher education, both in terms of our challenges and opportunities, in terms of the kinds of job Randy and his peers are trying to do to raise the bar in higher education in terms of cybersecurity?
So what really struck me, I had the opportunity to sit last night through an advisory board meeting that SANS partners with the different universities, and I'm thinking the problems are the same. They're discussing the same types of problems and that you face from a national perspective, but somehow we need to get the tools out there and so that the C-suite still is educated on how they're making choices about certain investments that have major impact on what could happen if a data is compromised and those types of things. So I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting that they're the same. The other thing that struck me was a lot of the policies that I put out in place. It's interesting to hear how they get kind of the interpretation down at the ground level of how to implement and how the interaction between the university and the federal government about how those rules are. The idea was, it's supposed to enhance it, but what I'm seeing now on this side is sometimes it's an inhibitor, and maybe it's a cost prohibitor that you have to do certain things so you can't necessarily get some of the federal funding or some of the
right.
types of things that a university should be able to get to because of some technical or policy requirement.
Right. Right. Well, thank you, Karen, so much for joining us here in San Antonio and for participating in the online interview. Randy, thanks to you for joining us. And to those of you online, you have a couple minutes to lift a virtual cup of coffee before our next sessions begin, and thank you for participating in the conference.